Chapter 38. I do not wish to impose my opinion on anyone who will not permit it, but such as it is, I offer it here for what it is worth. I cannot believe, and I do not believe, that Mrs. Eddy originated any of the thoughts and reasonings out of which the book Science and Health is constructed. And I cannot believe, and do not believe, that she ever wrote any part of that book. I think that, if anything in the world stands proven, and well and solidly proven, by unimpeachable testimony, the treacherous testimony of her own pen in her known and undisputed literary productions, it is that Mrs. Eddy is not capable of thinking upon high planes, nor of reasoning clearly, nor writing intelligently upon low ones. Inasmuch as, in my belief, the very first editions of the book Science and Health were far above the reach of Mrs. Eddy's mental and literary abilities, I think she has from the very beginning been claiming as her own another person's book, and wearing as her own property laurels rightfully belonging to that person, the real author of Science and Health. And I think the reason, and the only reason, that he has not protested is because his work was not exposed to print until after he was safely dead. That with an eye to business, and by grace of her business talent, she has restored to the world neglected and abandoned features of the Christian religion which her thousands of followers find gracious and blessed and contenting, I recognize and confess. But I am convinced that every single detail of the work except just that one, the delivery of the product to the world, was conceived and performed by another. Appendix A, original first preface to Science and Health. There seems a Christian necessity of learning God's power and purpose to heal both mind and body. This thought grew out of our early seeking Him in all our ways, and a hopeless as singular invalidism, that drugs increased instead of diminished, and hygiene benefited only for a season. By degrees we have drifted into more spiritual attitudes of thought, and experimented as we advanced until demonstrating fully the power of mind over the body. About the year 1862, having heard of a mesmerist in Portland who was treating the sick by manipulation, we visited him. He helped us for a time, then we relapsed somewhat. After his decease, and a severe casualty deemed fatal by skillful physicians, we discovered that the principle of all healing, and the law that governs it, is God, a divine principle, and a spiritual, not material law, and regained health. It was not an individual or mortal mind acting upon another, so-called mind, that healed us. It was the glorious truths of Christian Science that we discovered as we neared that verge of so-called material life named death. Yea, it was the great Shekinah, the spirit of life, truth, and love illuminating our understanding of the action and might of omnipotence. The old gentleman to whom we have referred had some very advanced views on healing, but he was not avowedly religious, neither scholarly. We interchanged thoughts on the subject of healing the sick. I restored some patients of his that he failed to heal, and left in his possession some manuscripts of mine containing corrections of his desultory pennings, which I am informed at his decease passed into the hands of a patient of his, now residing in Scotland. He died in 1865 and left no published works. The only manuscript that we ever held of his, longer than to correct it, was one of perhaps a dozen pages, most of which we had composed. He manipulated the sick, hence his ostensible method of healing was physical instead of mental. We helped him in the esteem of the public by our writings, but never knew of his stating orally, or in writing, that he treated his patients mentally. Never heard him give any directions to that effect, and have it from one of his patients, who now asserts that he was the founder of mental healing, that he never revealed to anyone his method. We refer to these facts simply to refute the calumnies and false claims of our enemies, that we are preferring dishonest claims to the discovery and founding at this period of metaphysical healing or Christian Science. The science and laws of a purely mental healing, and their method of application through spiritual power alone, else a mental argument against disease, are our own discovery at this date. true, the principle is divine and eternal, but the application of it to heal the sick had been lost sight of, and required to be again spiritually discerned, and its science discovered, that man might retain it through the understanding. Since our discovery in 1866 of the divine science of Christian healing, we have labored with tongue and pen to found this system. In this endeavor every obstacle has been thrown in our path, that the envy and revenge of a few disaffected students could devise. The superstition and ignorance of even this period have not failed to contribute their might towards misjudging us, while its Christian advancement and scientific research have helped sustain our feeble efforts. Since our first edition of Science and Health, published in 1875, two of the aforesaid students have plagiarized and pirated our works. In the issues of E.J., A., almost exclusively ours, were 13 paragraphs, without credit, taken verbatim from our books. Not one of our printed works was ever copied or abstracted from the published or from the unpublished writings of anyone. Throughout our publications of metaphysical healing or Christian science, when writing or dictating them, we have given ourselves to contemplation wholly apart from the observation of the material senses. To look upon a copy would have distracted our thoughts from the subject before us. We were seldom able to copy our own compositions, and have employed an amanuensis for the last 6 years. Every work that we have had published has been extemporaneously written, and out of 50 lectures and sermons that we have delivered the last year, 44 have been extemporaneous. We have distributed many of our unpublished manuscripts, loaned to one of our youngest students, R.K.Y., between 300 and 400 pages, of which we were sole author, giving him liberty to copy, but not to publish them. Leaning on the sustaining infinite with loving trust, the trials of today grow brief, and tomorrow is big with blessings. The wakeful shepherd, tending his flocks, beholds from the mountain's top the first faint morning beam, ere cometh the risen day. So from soul's loftier summits shines the pale star to prophet shepherd, and it traverses night, over to where the young child lies, in cradled obscurity, that shall waken a world. Over the night of error dawn the morning beams and guiding star of truth, and ye wise men are led by it to science, which repeats the eternal harmony that it reproduced, in proof of immortality. The time for thinkers has come, and the time for revolutions, ecclesiastical and civil, must come. Truth, independent of doctrines or time-honored systems, stands at the threshold of history. Contentment with the past, or the cold conventionality of custom, may no longer shut the door on science. Though empires fall, he whose right it is shall reign. Ignorance of God should no longer be the stepping stone to faith. Understanding him, whom to know aright is life eternal, is the only guarantee of obedience. This volume may not open a new thought, and make it at once familiar. It has the sturdy task of a pioneer, to hack away at the tall oaks and cut the rough granite, leaving future ages to declare what it has done. We made our first discovery of the adaptation of metaphysics to the treatment of disease in the winter of 1866. Since then we have tested the principle on ourselves and others, and never found it to fail to prove the statements herein made of it. We must learn the science of life, to reach the perfection of man, to understand God as the principle of all being, and to live in accordance with this principle, is the science of life. But to reproduce this harmony of being, the error of personal sense must yield to science, even as the science of music corrects tones caught from the ear, and gives the sweet concord of sound. There are many theories of physic and theology, and many calls in each of their directions for the right way, but we propose to settle the question of what is truth on the ground of proof, and let that method of healing the sick and establishing Christianity be adopted, that is found to give the most health, and to make the best Christians. Science will then have a fair field, in which case we are assured of its triumph over all opinions and beliefs. Sickness and sin have ever had their doctors, But the question is, have they become less because of them? The longevity of our antediluvians would say, no. And the criminal records of today utter their voices little in favor of such a conclusion. Not that we would deny to Caesar the things that are his, but that we ask for the things that belong to truth, and safely affirm, from the demonstrations we have been able to make, that the science of man understood would have eradicated sin, sickness, and death, in a less period than 6,000 years. We find great difficulties in starting this work right. Some shockingly false claims are already made to a metaphysical practice. Mesmerism, its very antipodes, is one of them. Hitherto we have never, in a single instance of our discovery, found the slightest resemblance between mesmerism and metaphysics. No special idiosyncrasy is requisite to acquire a knowledge of metaphysical healing. Spiritual sense is more important to its discernment than the intellect, and those who would learn this science without a high moral standard of thought and action will fail to understand it until they go up higher. Owing to our explanations constantly vibrating between the same points, an irksome repetition of words must occur. Also, the use of capital letters, genders, and technicalities peculiar to the science, variety of language, or beauty of diction, must give place to close analysis and unembellished thought. Open all things, enduring all things, to do good to our enemies, to bless them that curse us, and to bear to the sorrowing and the sick consolation and healing, we commit these pages to posterity. Mary Baker G. Eddy. Appendix B. The Gospel narratives bear brief testimony even to the life of our great master. His spiritual noumenon and phenomenon, silenced portraiture. Writers, less wise than the apostles, essayed in the apocryphal New Testament, a legendary and traditional history of the early life of Jesus. But St. Paul summarized the character of Jesus as the model of Christianity, in these words: consider him who endured such contradictions of sinners against himself, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. It may be that the mortal life battle still wages, and must continue till its involved errors are vanquished by victory-bringing science, but this triumph will come. God is over all. He alone is our origin, aim, and being. The real man is not of the dust, nor is he ever created through the flesh. For his father and mother are the one spirit, and his brethren are all the children of one parent, the eternal good. Any kind of literary composition was excessively difficult for Mrs. Eddy. She found it grinding hard work to dig out anything to say. She realized, at the above stage in her life, that with all her trouble she had not been able to scratch together even material enough for a child's autobiography, and also that what she had secured was in the main not valuable, not important, considering the age and the fame of the person she was writing about, and so it occurred to her to attempt, in that paragraph, to excuse the meagerness and poor quality of the feast she was spreading, by letting on that she could do ever so much better if she wanted to, but was under constraint of divine etiquette. To feed with more than a few indifferent crumbs a plebeian appetite for personal details about personages in her class was not the correct thing, and she blandly points out that there is precedent for this reserve. When Mrs. Eddy tries to be artful in literature, it is generally after the manner of the ostrich, and with the ostrich's luck. Please try to find the connection between the two paragraphs. M. T. Appendix C. The following is the spiritual signification of the Lord's Prayer. Principle, eternal and harmonious, nameless and adorable intelligence, thou art ever present and supreme. And when this supremacy of spiritual appear, the dream of matter will disappear. Give us the understanding of truth and love. And loving we shall learn God, and truth will destroy all error. And lead us unto the life that is soul, and deliver us from the errors of sense, sin, sickness, and death, for God is life, truth, and love forever. Science and health, edition of 1881. It seems to me that this one is distinctly superior to the one that was inspired for last year's edition. It is strange, but to my mind plain, that inspiring is an art which does not improve with practice. Appendix D, for verily I say unto you, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe, that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. Your Father knoweth what things ye have need of, before ye ask him. Christ Jesus. The prayer that reclaims the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of Him and unselfed love. Regardless of what another may say or think on this subject, I speak from experience. This prayer, combined with self-sacrifice and toil, is the means whereby God has enabled me to do what I have done for the religion and health of mankind. Thoughts unspoken are not unknown to the divine mind. Desire is prayer, and no less can occur from trusting God with our desires, that they may be molded and exalted, before they take form in audible word and in deeds. What are the motives for prayer? Do we pray to make ourselves better, or to benefit those that hear us, to enlighten the infinite, or to be heard of men? Are we benefited by praying? Yes, the desire which goes forth hungering after righteousness is blessed of our Father, and it does not return unto us void. God is not moved by the breath of praise to do more than He has already done, nor can the infinite do less than bestow all good, since He is unchanging wisdom and love. We can do more for ourselves by humble fervent petitions, but the All-Loving does not grant them simply on the ground of lip service, for He already knows all. Prayer cannot change the science of being, but it does bring us into harmony with it. Goodness reaches the demonstration of truth. A request that another may work for us never does our work. The habit of pleading with the divine mind, as one pleads with a human being, perpetuates the belief in God as humanly circumscribed, an error which impedes spiritual growth. God is love. Can we ask Him to be more? God is intelligence. Can we inform the infinite mind, or tell Him anything He does not already comprehend? Do we hope to change perfection? Shall we plead for more at the open fount, which always pours forth more than we receive? The unspoken prayer does bring us nearer the source of all existence and blessedness. Asking God to be God is a vain repetition. God is the same yesterday, and today, and forever, and He who is immutably right will do right, without being reminded of His province. The wisdom of man is not sufficient to warrant him in advising God. Who would stand before a blackboard, and pray the principle of mathematics, to work out the problem? The rule is already established, and it is our task to work out the solution. Shall we ask the divine principle of all goodness to do His own work? His work is done, and we have only to avail ourselves of God's rule in order to receive the blessing thereof. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.